Auschwitz versus Kingston, Mr. Herbert.
May it please the court, my name is Turner Herbert with the law firm of Mayer, Brown, Rowe, and Maugh, and I represent petitioner appellant John Balsowitz. Your honors, there is nothing in the district court order denying habeas review that is legally or even factually incorrect. The problem, instead, is what is missing from the order. You see, Mr. Balsowitz has suffered from continuous mental problems since the age of six, when he began being sexually abused once a week. He described these problems in his petition to the district court and asserted that they render him actually innocent. The magistrate judge, however, never acknowledged this claim. And so the question before us today is just one, and that is whether Mr. Balsowitz deserves a hearing in the district court to determine whether he can demonstrate actual innocence based on a mental disease.
You never actually argue actual innocence. Insanity is a defense. All you say is that, you know, he had a good defense of insanity. That wouldn't make him innocent.
Well, I believe, Your Honor, this court, for one, has determined that a petitioner's insanity at the time of the crime, which, of course, as you mentioned, is an affirmative defense, constitutes actual innocence.
Well, that's not true. And a lot of states have abolished insanity as a defense. It's true if a person can't form, you know, the mental element required, if he thinks he's killing a gerbil when he's killing a human being, then he would actually be innocent. But just being insane, just being able to make out the elements of the insanity defense doesn't make you innocent.
That's correct, Your Honor. In Wisconsin, they do adopt what's called a bifurcated trial system, which I'm sure you're familiar with, where insanity in Wisconsin does not necessarily, or does not, in fact, negate a defendant's intent to have committed the crime. However, Wisconsin has made clear that a finding of insanity in the responsibility phase of its trial procedure does absolve the defendant of criminal responsibility, and instead of receiving a criminal punishment or incarceration or sanction, the defendant is entrusted to a state mental institution. And that is certainly the majority disposition across the United States with respect to state law. A defendant that is found insanity.
That doesn't mean he's innocent, right? I mean, a person could be convicted and could be let out because the statute of limitations had run on his crime. That wouldn't make him innocent.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, it would find, presumably,
under the crime that somehow he didn't commit, right?
Yes, Your Honor. In Wisconsin, as in most other
states.
What's
the element? I mean, you just focus on insanity. You don't focus on this fellow's mental condition, actual intent. Now, maybe if he thought he was killing a demon, you know, okay, well, that might get you there. Well, and because killing a demon is not murder.
I would call your attention, Your Honor, to the portion of our brief.
Right, if you killed a person because you thought he was possessed by the devil.
Yes, Your Honor.
That wouldn't be actual innocence, right?
It would not be, or would be? I'm sorry.
Would not be, right?
Well,
you kill someone, you think he's possessed by the devil, but you know he's a human being, so you're killing a human being. If you thought he was a devil, or was an animal, then you wouldn't be guilty. You wouldn't have the requisite intent.
I agree with you. However, there is documented evidence in the record.
You haven't argued that distinction. Just said if he makes out the insanity defense, he's actually innocent.
That's correct. I have argued that point, and I believe that is.
Well, I don't agree with you because, as I say, there's a big difference between insanity defense, even if it means that you can't be convicted of the crime. There are a lot of things that can prevent you from being convicted of a crime, even though you're not innocent.
That's correct.
You're only innocent if some element is missing, like the mental element, which may or may not be if the person's crazy.
Well, both this court and the Supreme Court have defined actual innocence as an elastic concept, which embraces
not very helpful.
I'm sorry.
And anyway, I don't understand that elastic concept.
In the case of Britz v. Cowan, Your Honors, which this court heard, this court said that a petitioner's insanity at the time of the crime constitutes actual innocence. And the Supreme Court has said that the literal negation of a particular element of a crime is not the only instance where actual innocence may be shown. It also incorporates those instances where a defendant is absolved of criminal responsibility, which is, in fact, what we have in this case.
Would you extend that to a statute of limitations case?
I'm sorry?
Would you extend that to a case where the conviction was invalid because the statute of limitations had run when the person was indicted?
I believe in that elastic understanding of the term, or of the concept, rather. I believe it would, yes, Your Honor.
Well, that doesn't make any sense at all, right? That says a person can ignore these statute of limitations and get a windfall. He's guilty, he killed the person, but, you know, or committed some other crime.
Well, it would be another crime because there's no statute of limitations
for murder.
That's correct.
And he commits another, so whatever the crime was, he gets a windfall because of a defense that he raises, you know, many years after he's been convicted.
Well, Your Honor, I would only argue that this is certainly not an instance of a windfall.
What sense does that make? Well, you've got this elastic. Your elastic defense seems to contemplate windfalls for these people.
Well, then please let me clarify, because that is certainly not what we're asking.
Well, that's a windfall in my statute of limitations case.
No windfall would result here, Your Honor, because
yes,
all that we're asking...
Yes, but it would in the statute of limitations case.
Excuse me?
It would in the statute of limitations case.
Yes, in your hypothetical, I imagine that would be. But this is certainly...
So is the elastic shrinking now, or what?
Well, that is the nature of elastic.
Let me pile in here for a minute. If a lawyer failed to raise the statute of limitations because he didn't realize it, that would be an incompetency matter, wouldn't it?
Incompetency of the lawyer?
Of the lawyer.
Yes, Your Honor.
So that would give you a constitutional right to attack it, whether you were innocent or guilty. You attack on a basis that at the time of the trial you would not accord it a competent lawyer because he failed to raise the statute of limitations.
That's correct.
And therefore you would be discharged.
Your conviction would be reversed, yes,
yes.
Your Honor. Yes.
Since the statute of run, you're discharged. You go home.
That's correct.
That would not be a windfall, would it?
No, I don't believe so. And this would not be a windfall either, because once this case is...
That would simply be carrying out the law, which by carrying out the law, you don't acquire a windfall. You simply take advantage of what the law is. The law says the statute of limitations leaves you home free, even if you did commit the crime.
That's exactly right. But I would point out that we are certainly not arguing, and Mr. Boswitz has never argued, that he should receive anything approximating a windfall. All we're asking, Your Honors, is that under the law of virtually every circuit to have addressed this issue, is that when a district court fails...
What is the diagnosis of your client?
There has been none, Your Honor, and that's due to the fact
the only issue you've raised then is that the lawyer was aware of the existence of these facts and did not have a doctor look at them? Is that the problem?
There were two competency evaluations, Your Honor, and of course those are different from a psychiatric evaluation.
And what did the
The competency evaluations indicated that Mr. Boswitz may have been suffering from a, quote, organic brain disorder and could be psychotic.
Right.
And Mr. Berman, who was the trial counsel of Mr. Boswitz, was abundantly aware of this. In fact, brought it to the trial court's attention on the opening day of trial.
Right.
Yet inexplicably failed to request the psychological or psychiatric evaluation at the same time that he did request a competency evaluation.
Yeah, but all of the things we're now discussing were known to everybody involved for a long, long time.
That's absolutely correct.
And nothing happened.
That's absolutely correct.
Let me, just so I understand this.
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought he went through the Wisconsin system. This issue wasn't raised until 1999.
That's correct.
That's when the ball started rolling.
That's correct.
whether or not Wisconsin had to entertain anything in 1999, good question, but it did. And it determined, it had a hearing, Berman testified, and the Wisconsin court found there was no ineffective assistance because the not guilty by reason of mental defect claim would not have carried the day. Isn't that
That is an accurate recital of the history, Your Honor. Several things that I would like to point out. First of all, that the transcript of that hearing, which is in Wisconsin is called a Mockner hearing, the transcript of that hearing, although requested expressly by Mr. Balsowicz, and that's in the record, the transcript of that hearing was not included in the record, so we do not have it for review. Furthermore, Mr. Balsowicz's attorney at that hearing, whose name was Russell Bohawk, did not introduce any evidence supporting Mr. Balsowicz.
But as Judge Bauer's questions brought out, I mean, you may have had a great ineffective assistance claim, but that's been known for many, many years, right? And what's the reason for not applying a statute of limitations to say, you know, you've got a problem, you have to bring a timely complaint. You can't just wait an indefinite amount of time. You know, Congress doesn't like that anymore. They want.
No, you're right, Your Honor, and they have statutes of limitations. Of course, exist for a valid reason, but there are also exceptions to those statute of limitations, and most courts have found.
But your exception swallows it, right? Because look, you can't. As a practical matter, you know, with ineffective assistance because of the prejudice requirement, you don't even have an ineffective assistance claim or any of these other constitutional claims unless there really is some possibility of actual innocence.
That's right. It's a gateway to hear the underlying constitutional claim.
But that means that the statute of limitations is going to be completely empty.
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the burden...
Because you're always going to argue that, you know, this was a serious constitutional error. That is, this is an error that it might actually have involved a miscarriage of justice. Right?
That's correct. And I do not believe that the exception swallows the rule.
So what's going to be the type of constitutional... You know, collateral attack on a conviction that isn't going to be within your actual innocence exception.
99% of the cases, Your Honor, and of course this court has heard those types of cases where they've remanded to the district court for factual determination of actual innocence, and in 9 out of 10 times it is found that.
You're not tracking my question.
I'm sorry.
Think of a constitutional claim where your exception to the statute of limitations, the habeas corpus statute, would not be applicable.
Where the defendant cannot factually show actual innocence, which is all the time.
No.
But he does deserve the hearing.
It's going to be empty because you're saying in every single case there's going to be an actual innocence hearing before you can apply the statute of limitations.
Well, no, Your Honor. There's only going to be a hearing if the district court fails to consider the claim in the first instance.
Look,
that was
someone
the error.
Brings a claim 20 years late, and you're going to say, well, wait, that claim can't be dismissed on the basis of statute of limitations without a determination whether this person might actually be innocent.
And a petitioner that makes that claim has to meet an extremely high burden, which is the Schlupp v. Dalo burden, to show that it was more likely than not.
Whether it's a big burden or it's a little burden, it's very odd to say that you can't... Usually you determine a statute of limitations offense by looking at the date of the suit.
That's
and
right.
And the date of the...
And we don't question that in any...
You do, because you're saying every time defense statute of limitations is pleaded in a habeas corpus case, there has to be a hearing to determine whether this person might actually have been innocent.
Only if the petitioner raises that issue, Your Honor.
Right, then, of course, but he'll always raise it, right? It gets him a free hearing.
But in 99% of the times, it'll be summarily dismissed. But
why?
The district court
why
didn't.
Why will it be summarily?
Because he can't make the factual showing required
why
by Schlupp.
He puts in
because
evidence.
It's very difficult.
He says, I didn't commit the. I couldn't. If my lawyer had been good, he would have shown that I didn't commit element A, B, or C.
He has to show that it was more likely than not that no reasonable juror.
Yeah, but the point is, there's going to be a hearing in every case to see whether this person was actually innocent.
Well, not so much a separate hearing, Your Honor. It just happens.
Oh, separate, great. Separate together doesn't matter.
It can, in fact,
the
it doesn't even need to be a hearing.
The application of statute of limitations will be defeated by the fact that there's an actual innocence exception.
I don't believe it would be...
As if you had a rule of statute of limitations which said, well, statute of limitations doesn't... statute of limitations will not be a defense if the person against whom it's asserted really has a good case.
And that's exactly what the habeas jurisprudence has said for decades with respect to procedural default.
But all you're saying is you have a really good case.
I'm sorry?
All you're saying is you have a really good case.
I believe we do have a very good case, Your Honor, and I would ask that the court remand this case to
because
the district court.
Because you have
court.
A really good case, the statute of limitations doesn't apply. I mean, that's your proposition.
That's correct. The statute of limitations should be set aside in this particular instance.
But statute of limitations are not limited to weak cases.
Well, that's why exceptions exist, Your Honor, so that an innocent person does not
incarcerated. That's not an exception to statute of limitations. You have a weak case.
No, sir, it's not. But the actual innocence...
You know, you're not going to win an argument with him, so you might as well quit while you're still standing.
I believe I will, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Herbert. Mr. O'Brien, we'll give you some more time since I was obnoxious.
May it please the court, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Wisconsin, Daniel O'Brien, appears on behalf of the appellee, Warden Kingston. There's no dispute here that the petition is untimely. It was filed when all the time is added up over 2 years late. There's also no dispute that Mr. Boskowitz waited almost 5 years between the completion of direct state court review and the commencement of collateral state court review. So we not only have untimeliness, we have obvious case of latches. And as the United States Supreme Court in the recent case of Pace v. DiGuglielmo held, latches is an important consideration and may defeat the claim, even independent of any timeliness issues. Taken to its logical conclusion, Mr. Boskowitz's argument would create, in essence, an insanity exception to the statute of limitations. After all, any criminal defendant 5 years, 10 years, 20 years after completion of his state court proceedings could argue, I had a bad lawyer who should have raised an insanity defense, and that would have proved my legal innocence, even though not my actual innocence. That would have kept me out of prison. It would have put me in a state mental hospital, but it would have kept me out of prison, and therefore the statute of limitations doesn't apply to me. Congress certainly did not intend that. It is impossible to believe that the U.S. Supreme Court would write such an exception into this rule. And this
Mr.
court...
Brian, supposing the prisoner was so insane he was unable to contemplate the existence of the statute of limitations. He didn't know about it, didn't know he had been tapped, didn't even know he was crazy.
Well, you know, that gets into, I think that might tie into an equitable tolling argument, which is another argument that's not being presented here, that Boskowitz is not arguing that might be some extraordinary circumstance.
Yeah, you can appreciate the possibility that might happen.
I could imagine the possibility where it's just simply not discovered until
because
years after the fact.
The insanity of the petitioner, that is, his mental condition was so poor that he couldn't possibly know to discuss it with his lawyer, so
correct.
He didn't know the lawyer blew it.
That's certainly that could at least tie into an equitable tolling argument.
But it's not this case.
That's not this case. I mean, it's clear that from day one, everyone was aware that Mr. Boskowitz had some mental issues. There's no question about it. We had a competency hearing before the trial in 1991. The doctors who examined him in 1991 found they had some difficulties. However, they found him competent to proceed to trial. And then at the post-conviction stage, the Wisconsin courts reviewed the question whether...
What about the evidence that he thought he was killing a demon? Now, actually, there's very little evidence stated here. Maybe that's not accurate, but...
From what I can gather from the representations, and of course none of this was presented to the district court, but what I can gather from the representations in Mr. Balzowitz's brief is that Mr. Balzowitz had an intense fear of spiders and snakes. Now, is that...
He shares that with a good portion of the human race, but apparently...
Yeah, well, that's... I do, too.
Doesn't he make him unique?
Well, spiders don't bother me, but snakes do. And
There are some spiders that bother you.
You know, and so, you know...
Big ones.
But is that proof of legal insanity? What, you know...
Yeah, but...
Or does that render you innocent? I mean, I guess that's the question.
Really a demon,
and I think it's clear under Wisconsin law, at least, that it does not render you. You still intend to kill.
Well,
you
what
have
if he
not
killed someone in thinking the person was a spider.
Well, now you know that's interesting because there is Wisconsin law does recognize diminished capacity in that situation.
Well, that's more than diminished capacity.
Well, I mean that you actually believe. That you're acting in self-defense.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that sort of situation can be presented at trial, and that those sorts of arguments can be presented. But we're way beyond that point. I mean, the fact was those arguments were not presented. There's no claim that sort of a defense should have been put on, that he was acting in self-defense against Spider-Man or against a snake or against a demon.
Let me see if I can define the issue as you understand it. This is only a question of whether the statute of limitations is interrupted in this particular case, for this particular, it's a one-way ticket. It's not a view for the future. That this one should not, this statute of limitations marched on and preclude him from presenting his case any farther than it has. Is that correct?
Well, I think the statute of limitations applies here because, this court has held,
The issue then is only whether or not they have raised sufficient on there what they're talking about to say that the statute of limitations shouldn't apply to this case. That's the issue. And if they have not done that under the pleadings and what we have in the law available, they lose. And you win.
Right, right. I mean, I think, my approach is, in this case, my sense at the district court level and at this level has been this is a plain AEDPA statute of limitations case. And the claim of I'm actually innocent because I'm legally insane, first of all, what fails for two reasons. One, that's not actual innocence under Wisconsin law. And number two, even if it was, it has to be tied to the doctrine of equitable tolling, which requires a showing of an extraordinary circumstance that prevented you from raising it earlier and excusable neglect, which this court in Gildon v. Bowen plainly held that actual innocence claim has to be tethered to a showing of equitable tolling. And Mr. Balzowitz has disavowed any equitable tolling claim. He disavowed it in the district court and again abandoned in the district court and has disavowed it here. He's arguing an equitable estoppel claim, but whatever we're arguing here, if we're talking about equities, then the doctrine of latches comes in, and 5 years delay between direct review and collateral review, in my mind, is a clear case of latches. And coupled with a 2-year delay in bringing the habeas action doesn't get you beyond AEDPA. And I think that's the problem, and that's why he loses in this case, but any litigant in the future who argues my lawyer was bad because he didn't raise an insanity defense cannot get in the federal courthouse door once that 1 year has passed unless he ties a claim of actual innocence, as Gildon v. Bowen requires, to an equitable tolling argument and shows that he was prevented from making that claim earlier. It is not even clear, I must point out, that actual innocence even is still available. I think Pace v. DiGuglielmo raised real questions. I think this court has acknowledged that this may not have survived the creation of 28 U.S.C. 2244(1) sub A through sub D, where Congress anticipated various situations where the 1 year statute might be told, and you know, such as the factual predicate not becoming known until years after the fact, i.e. DNA evidence that comes to light 10 years after a conviction and proves the defendant's innocence. Obviously, that case comes into federal court. AEDPA 1 year statute does not apply, and you get relief. And so that's. But again, if we adopt the petitioner's position, then we're basically creating a bad lawyer, I should have put on an insanity defense exception to the AEDPA statute of limitations. And that Congress did not intend, and that I would suggest this court would not allow after its decision in Gildon v. Bowen.
Okay.
And unless there are further questions,
okay.
Conclude
my argument.
Thank you.
Mr. Herbert, we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You sure you want to take him?
I'm sorry?
Are you sure you want to take him?
I believe so. Hopefully to allay some of the concerns of Judge Posner, I just wanted to touch on one and possibly two points. First is that we are not arguing, and Mr. Balsowitz has never argued, that just a mere assertion in the brief of, oh, I'm actually innocent, should trigger the setting aside of the statute of limitations. You have to have demonstrable facts, which we do in this case. Now, admittedly, the record does not have a wealth of facts, but that's attributable to the fact that his lawyer didn't investigate, despite conscious awareness of a long series of mental problems. Had he investigated, we would have far more evidence, one way or the other, to determine whether or not he has a colorable claim of actual innocence.
And that's committed in the course of a robbery, wasn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. With a co-defendant, I might add. The second point that I would like to make is that Kingston is correct. This is not an equitable tolling case. Mr. Balsowitz has never argued that it is. In Gildon v. Bowen, as I know Judge Bauer will recollect, was an equitable tolling case.
Actually, I was speaking with the court, but there you go.
Okay. In any event, it was an equitable tolling case, and the question there was whether actual innocence is relevant to a determination of equitable tolling. Another argument that we're not arguing. We're saying that the miscarriage of justice exception, as noted by the Northern District here
but
in Illinois.
Is Mr. O'Brien correct? You're arguing for an insanity exception to the one-year statute of limitations?
We're arguing for an actual innocence exception, as some other courts have recognized, based on insanity. That's correct, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I'll...
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you.
And you're handling this pro bono, I assume. Well, we thank you very much for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client. And we thank Mr. O'Brien also. And next case for argument is...